This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will remember the remarkable Tabby Thomas, who died a few days ago, one of the great musicians of any land who practiced his craft in this land. We'll talk with Johnny Palazzotto, the veteran music promoter, about Tabby Thomas and about an upcoming event this Saturday at Baton Rouge Magnet High featuring Zachary Richard and Terrence Simeon. They also are slated to be with us for just a bit. Also on the show today, Dawn Wells. She played Marianne on Gilligan's Island 50 years ago this year. Gilligan's Island began its run. It was only on for a few years, but is part of our culture forevermore. We'll talk with Dawn Wells. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF.
Tonight we have Terrence Simeon. And all right, let's give it up.
Hey, we got some young lovers on the boat, y'all. Y'all probably realize we have. Put your hands in, y'all. Give it up for Eric. He just got engaged to this.
Y'all. See a ball. Beauty patinas.
This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757, and you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We start with music promoter Johnny Palazzotto, who is celebrating his 43rd year in the industry. He's been around for a long time and has rubbed shoulders with some of the greats of music and in other lines of work involving entertainment. And today is a somber day in our community because we say goodbye to the legendary Ernest Tabby Thomas. You knew him pretty well.
We've been visiting quite a bit over the last couple of years. Larry Garner and Rudy Richard and I visited Tabby in the nursing home and shared some more stories and relished in his character, in his verbal dialogue. Tabby had his own vocabulary, and it brought a lot of humor and a lot of joy to anyone having a conversation with him.
Well, Tabby Thomas was born Ernest Joseph Thomas Sr. He died on New Year's Day, and he certainly is a blues legend, not only from Baton Rouge, but the rest of the world adopted him. He was popular all over the place, and of course he has a famous son, perhaps even more famous than Tabby, and Chris Thomas King, who's been with us a few times, and we'll talk a bit about Tabby and his legacy and his life, and today at 10 o'clock his funeral will be held right after this show, and Johnny will be darting out of here to attend the funeral. And at the Manship Theater tonight, you'll be master of ceremonies for an event celebrating the life of Tabby Thomas.
That's quite an honor. There will be some real blues legends there tonight, some of whom Tabby gave his start. Kenny Neal hosting, I believe Tab Benoit is going to be there. Numerous local blues musicians who got their start and were nurtured by Tabby at the Blues Box. I've said this a couple of times before. Tabby's Blues Box was the real thing. It was an inner city roadhouse blues roadhouse. And, you know, Morgan Freeman and folks like that spent a lot of money to build roadhouses in Mississippi, but we've always had two of the most originals right here in Baton Rouge, Teddy's Juke Joint and Tabby's Blues Box and Heritage Hall.
Well, the services for Tabby are at 10 o'clock, as mentioned, at Shiloh Missionary Baptist Church. He's going to be buried at the old Port Hudson National Cemetery. And tonight, on stage at the Manship Theater, there will be a celebration of the remarkable 84 years that Tabby Thomas lived in our midst. And for those who are unfamiliar with his music, here's how Tabby sounded in his prime, which went on for a very long time. The great Tabby Thomas. John Fred did a pretty good rendition of that song, too.
John Fred loved Tabby, as we all do. He was influenced to an extent by Tabby.
Well, he was a character, Tabby was, yeah. In addition to being a great performer. But went to McKinley High School, and he played quarterback there.
He did. And he loved to tell stories about playing quarterback at McKinley, and it was kind of hard to imagine because Tabby, I think, was only about 5'8", 5'9", and he was a little bit overweight in his older days. But he was flamboyant.
He was indeed. And after McKinley, he went to the Air Force. That's why he's going to be buried in a national cemetery. He was a boxer. Then he moved to San Francisco. Entered a talent show sponsored by KSAN Radio, and as they say, the rest is history. He formed a label, Blue Beat Records, and came back home and opened the club on North Boulevard in 1979. Now, some would say that place was a dive. It was not a pristine event, but the music there was magnificent.
Well, architecturally, it was old red brick, and the ceiling was the very cherished copper, I don't know the description of it really, but it was the kind of ceiling that legendary and historic buildings always had. The loft in the Blues Box was a special place because it was a little bit shaky, and the staircase going up there had no rail coming down or going up to hold on to. But, you know, some great music came out of there. I remember when I just came back from California, moved back home in late 81, I was working with Greg Wright, and we went to the Blues Box, and he had never been to a place like the Blues Box, and it was an enlightening thing for Greg to be in that environment. And I remember Chris Thomas King was there with us that night, and he might have been, I don't know, 14, 15, 16 years old, and he was really coming into his own as a young blues man. I think Tabby was a little bit tough on Chris and his son Tammy in terms of tutoring them. Larry Garner tells a few stories about that. Larry and Tabby got to be very, very close over the years, as did all of the guys that came up there. John Lisi, Tabby Tabinois, Kenny Neal, they all began their blues careers at Tabby's Blues Box.
297-5633, if you'd like to join the conversation. I'm sure many remember Tabby and his club. Emily notes that it's a shame that Tabby's place and Romano's were torn down to build a bridge. Nice bridge, but
I gotta tell
is
you,
that progress, Johnny?
I don't really know why it had to be torn down, but I have to say that the bridge, the overpass, is really a good thing for downtown Baton Rouge. If you got to get stuck at that train in the morning. But again, I would just as well like to have Tabby's Blues Box right, back.
Well, let's give another listen to one of Tabby's selections. Tabby, who had a career that spanned over half a century, and I think we've got something else from Ernest Tabby Thomas.
Oh, I was hoping it was going to be bald-headed.
Women call me Candy, sweetest thing in town. They even call me Honey, because I lay my love down. Sweetest thing in town. Well, I don't light my fire till midnight, and before me there was none. I make all my pretty women sing and jump for joy. When I shake my money maker, I shake it like a little old toy.
That one was Candy, not about the second wife of former Governor Edwin Washington Edwards. Tabby was the Candy he was singing about.
I bet she never went there.
I bet who didn't?
Candy.
I bet Edwin's been there, though.
I don't know.
That'd be
did.
A good question, but he probably has a time or two. Seven children and 52 years of marriage for Ernest Tabby Thomas. He had quite a life.
Most definitely.
And
I don't think we'll ever forget Tabby Thomas. He and Rifle Neal both decided to forgo going on the road as bluesmen and stayed home and raised a family, which is, to our Baton Rouge's benefit, because Neal family and the Thomas family, especially with Chris Thomas and his acting and music mm-hmm. career with Oh Brother, Where Art Thou and the movie Ray and his touring. And then Kenny is international all over the place. Their dads stayed home and let them be the blues heroes that they are.
Tonight, 7 o'clock at the Manship Theater, a celebration of Tabby's life. And the funeral is at 10 o'clock at Shiloh Missionary Baptist Church down the street from the funeral home on Eddie Robinson Senior Drive, where Tabby has been the last few days. The family has invited the public to attend all the events, including his burial, Tabby's burial at the old Port Hudson National Cemetery following today's funeral services. So he was a man of the public, and he will be celebrated by the city that embraced him and where it all began for Tabby Thomas. Before we dispense with a conversation about Tabby, and I don't know if we'll ever do that totally, Michael notes that you were sizing up Tabby's abilities as a quarterback. He says you were a quarterback. Is that right?
I was.
Really? You were at
Baton Rouge High
when they had a football team, right? The Bulldogs.
We had the winningest record in the 3-year history of the school. 5 losses over 3 years. The really interesting thing about Baton Rouge High's state championship and district championship run was we got the coaches from Estruma. Coach Ray Porter and Leon McGraw came over from Estruma and started coaching Baton Rouge High, and they were the difference.
What year was that, Johnny?
1963 to 1966.
Okay. So Johnny
I was
played
back,
a few years
I
ago.
I was a backup quarterback on the state championship team. Joe Womack was the quarterback that scored the winning touchdown in the state championship game here in Memorial Stadium.
Well, I think Baton Rouge High is the only school in the United States that has a football Hall of Famer and a basketball Hall of Famer.
Bob Pettit.
And Jimmy Taylor.
Bob Pettit played basketball on the auditorium stage. That, in the 50s, was the basketball court at Baton Rouge High.
Well, it's been refurbished in a grand way, and Saturday there will be a major event at that auditorium, and we'll talk about that with Johnny Palazzotto. And we're also slated to hear from Terrence Simeon and Zachary Richard. So we'll be back after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757. And Inkster's show at WRKF.org. Coming tonight at 7 o'clock, a celebration of Tabby Thomas's life at the Manship Theater. The Master of Ceremonies is our guest, Johnny Palazzotto. And then Saturday night at the new and refurbished and grand auditorium at Baton Rouge Magnet High School, a major event featuring Zachary Richard and Terrence Simeon. And Johnny Palazzotto, you're involved with this in a big way, as is Lieutenant Governor Jay Darden, who was with us yesterday. Should be quite a show.
This is an opportunity for folks in South Louisiana to witness and see Grammy nominees. Terrence has won a Grammy. He won a Grammy 3 years ago. Might have been 4 years ago. Zachary has won the Felix Award up in Canada 6 times, which is the parallel to the Grammy in Canada. Also on the bill of the Hot 8 Brass Band. All three of these acts are nominated in the American Roots category. It's a combination of the Hawaiians, American Indians, and the Cajun and Zydeco musicians and artists. I'm very excited about this year's Grammys, especially because of the three nominees from Louisiana. But Saturday night will be a really an interesting and exciting show. Lieutenant Governor's office has put together quite a show. Put together an ambassador program which recognizes artists and enables artists who are touring throughout the world to promote Louisiana, and therefore the state supports them in their touring. Terrence is one of the first ambassadors and has done a phenomenal job in representing the state of Louisiana and our Zydeco and Creole culture.
We're going to talk to Terrence Simeon and Zachary Richard in just a moment. Dan downtown has been waiting patiently. Dan, good morning. You're on with Johnny Palazzotto.
Hi. So, you recall that one of the Baton Rouge High losses was November the 22nd, 1963, the Jesuit. It was the night that JFK was assassinated.
Right. I was on the sideline. I was a sophomore then, a 10th grader, so I didn't get to play, but I was there. I do remember that.
Sounds like you were there, Dan.
Yes, I was. You know, I wasn't on the team. I just took a trip up to cheer on my alma mater for the game. And I remember that the Jesuit who was on the bus with us made us be silent. We couldn't celebrate on the way back in memory of the president we had lost that day.
Well, thank you, Dan. Appreciate it.
I know.
All right. Pat Screen was at LSU by then, and of course he was a former Jesuit quarterback who had led the Blue Jays to the state title. 297-5633. Let's start with Terrence Simeon. We're going to hear from Zachary as well, but Terrence, as Johnny noted, will be featured along with his Zydeco experience. Good morning, Terrence.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Johnny. How y'all doing today?
Hey, T, good to hear from you, man.
Good to be here. You know, before I get started, I want to send out my condolences to the Thomas family. You know, our prayers and our hearts are with you today. And, you know, can't say enough about the legendary Tabby Thomas. It's going to be a tremendous loss in the music world, and just want to let everybody know in the family that we're thinking about him today.
Thank you, Terrence.
Well, Terrence, as Johnny noted, is big stuff across the country, nominated for a Grammy, and the 56th Annual Grammy Awards will be in Los Angeles, where the event is always held. And do you know the date on that? It's next month.
Sunday, right? The 26th of this month.
Of this month.
Yes.
Of this month. So this is a chance to see Terrence just 15 days before the Grammy event. And for those who have not heard this fine gentleman and his Zydeco experience, let's give a listen to the exceptional talents of Mr. Terrence Simeon. Good stuff from Terrence Simeon. And Terrence, I'm sure you'll be ready to go come Saturday.
Oh, yeah, we're looking forward to it. You know, Baton Rouge has always been good to us. We've played many times in the past 32 years and always look forward to going to Baton Rouge.
There you go. And you'll be joined by Zachary Richard, who most recently was on this stage with
Johnny Rivers.
That was quite a performance. Yeah. Thought Johnny was going to go on all night.
Man, looking forward to being there with Zach and the Hot 8 Brass Band, two fine bands, you know, and great bunch of guys, man, great bunch of guys.
Well, I think Zachary is with us. So, Zachary, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Johnny. Good morning, Terrence. How's everybody doing on this cold Tuesday morning?
I'm sure you're ready to go, and it'll be a lot warmer Saturday. I think it's going to be 70 degrees Saturday, if you can believe that.
Yeah.
But it'll be hot at Baton Rouge Magnet High School's auditorium.
I'm layered.
Yeah. You know, Johnny Rivers said you were a tough act to follow.
Well, I guess Johnny Rivers is a tough act to open for, so I guess that makes us even. I don't know, but I'm just really happy to go back to Baton Rouge High School, the alma mater of the legendary Johnny Palazzotta. And just to be there and just to be part of this experience for me is a real thrill. You know, there's five of us that are fortunate enough to be in the running for the Grammy. But I think anybody in the music business these days deserves an award. I'm just really thrilled to be here, and I'm looking forward to the show on Saturday and to see all our friends from Baton Rouge.
Let's give a listen to the spectacular Zachary Richard.
Dans le sud de la Louisiane, dans le bois d'Atacapa, où la rivière vient à lever. Au bord de la gombige, dans son feuillage, où les branches font le crochet, les hirondelles reviennent chaque printemps.
Zachary and Terrence Simeon, the Hot 8 Brass Band, all featured Saturday night at Baton Rouge Magnet High School. at the auditorium, which Johnny Palazzotto, who knows a good venue when he sees one and hears one, you say it's the best in the city.
It might be the best in the state other than the new Sanger in New Orleans. It's classic. It really is. Wonderful room, very comfortable. Stage and the sound will be supreme and great. By the way, you can get tickets on the Baton Rouge High Magnet School website, which is brmhs@ebrschools.org, or they will be available at the door.
All right, and we're talking about internationally acclaimed musicians and Mr. Simeon and Mr. Richard. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining
Both
us this
of these
morning.
These guys are world class.
They are world class, and they'll be here with us Saturday night. Thank you, Terrence. Thank you, Zachary. See you
Thank
Saturday.
Thank you, Jim. Looking forward to it, and we'll be on the stage at the Baton Rouge High this Saturday for all our friends, and we want to invite all our friends to come out this Saturday and see us, and we're certainly going to have a good time.
I'm sure that'll be the case, and that's an understatement. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Take care. Have a good show. And, Johnny, we'll let you get off to pay your respects to the great Tabby Thomas, and then tonight at 7.
And, party, Jim, I got to tell you, your radio show is, the content in this show is comparable to the artist in this state.
Well,
thank you so much
God
for presenting
you.
This.
And one of the reasons why Johnny likes the content is because of guests like the one we have right now, Dawn Wells, who has had a spectacular career in show business and, of course, is best known as Marianne on Gilligan's Island. Good morning, Dawn.
Good morning. I was listening to your other interview. What a lovely voice. Oh, wow.
Well, thank you, dear. And you, of course, will always be Marianne. Long after you and I are gone, we'll be talking about Gilligan's Island. This show truly took a life of its own, and it was only on for a few years. How do you explain the enduring popularity of this program?
I think it's very interesting because we were made such fun of at the very beginning. You know, that's the stupidest show they ever saw. It was ridiculous. We got the highest ratings with the audiences when they tested it, so CBS seemed forced to put us on the air. And we have never been off the air since 1964. We're in 30 languages all over the world because I think it's a common denominator. I think it's it was the first family out of the living room, you know, mom and dad and the kids. That's all that sitcom stuff before. It was seven misfits, so to speak, trying to get along, and that's what the world's doing right now. All these misfits are all trying to get along. And I think it's kind of, it's a relief. It's fun. It makes you laugh. It makes you forget. It's the most ridiculous plot. Why do we ever get off that island? But there's something everybody can identify with in every language, in every country. It's simple. I think Sherwood Schwartz just did something kind of magical. I understand now Warner Brothers is going to make the film. I'm really hoping they don't destroy that magic that happened between us all. Simple, simple, simple. It was just simple. Corny, funny, wonderful talent. And of course, I think my character had a lot to do with she was sort of the moral compass of it all. I hate keep using that word, but she kind of was the optimist, and everybody was kind of a little off base, but we all loved each other, and it showed. There was no bullying. You know, Gilligan is the one who got us in trouble all the time. We didn't do anything about it. We loved him anyway. So I think that show, it transcends. It's kind of like Disney. it keeps going. It gives you a happy heart when you're through.
297-5633, if you'd like to talk to the fantastic Dawn Wells. She said it in 1964, so later this year, come September, it'll be 50 years since Gilligan's Island made its debut, and the television world was changed forevermore by Dawn and Tina Louise and Bob Denver and Alan Hale. It was quite a crew, Jim Backus, Russell Johnson. It seemed that there was great chemistry among the crew. Was that the case?
Yes, very much so. And I think Bob and Alan sort of dictated that. There was never an angry word with anybody. Alan was probably the most gentle, dearest human being. And Bob was just childlike. There was never any animosity, never any egos. It was just a happy set all the time. Nowadays, I don't know what goes on, but it was a blessing, I think. Kind of funny. I've done a lot of other things since, but nothing ever would take the place of All Over the World. I've been in the Solomon Islands where they say, Marianne, I recognize you. Beijing. Marianne, Marianne. I'm fascinated, and yet I'm very fortunate.
Now, you were cast in that role as Marianne Summers, despite some fierce opposition from actresses who even then were well-known, including Raquel Welch. Is that right?
Yes, actually, we tested. There were three characters at the very beginning of the show that were three school teachers. And when CBS bought it, they said, we need to rewrite. We need to get some, I guess, more variety. So they wrote a movie star, a professor, and a farm girl. And we auditioned on both coasts when they got ready to do the series, both coasts. And on Los Angeles, I was at CBS TV Center, and we were there for a week. I don't know how many people. Every little actress in town, we were all auditioning together for the professor, for Gingers. And the same thing was going on in New York City. Tina got cast in New York City first. That's the reason we were and the rest. Russell and I ran the rest because her agent said, fifth position billing, you know, after the Howells, nobody else. But they didn't make a decision in Los Angeles for a long time. I tested for 5 days. And they kept saying, it's yours, but come on, let's see if you match up with somebody, blah, blah, blah. Well, you never know it's yours till you sign the contract. And on Thursday, Raquel Welch came in to audition. I thought, well, that's the end of me right there. But she wasn't, I don't think that BC movie with that wonderful fur bikini, I don't think that was out yet. I don't think she'd made that wonderful, sexy body known before. And she really, I think, would have made a better Ginger than a Marianne. I think, but I got it anyway, so
well,
I'm very happy.
And I think you were the appropriate actress to play this role. You were meant to be Marianne.
And, I guess. It's nice to know.
You know, I've been doing radio shows for a long time, and I can recall several years ago when I was doing a three-hour program, I had some guests who didn't show up and some others who weren't as good as we thought they were going to be. And so I was in kind of a jam and ran out of things to talk about. And I remember the producer at the time, Ricky Stockner, said, Ginger or Marianne? You know, the phone lines lit up like you wouldn't believe. And most of the guys who called said Marianne.
You know, isn't that interesting? I'm doing a book. I'm writing a book, of course. It's the 50th year. And I think that good girls do first finish first, so to speak.
On September 26th, which, by the way,
is it 26th or 22nd? I don't remember.
I don't know. I think it's the 26th. I've got that in my brain because it's the 100th anniversary of the birth of one of my heroes, Jack LaLanne. But on September 26th, Gilligan's Island will be 50 years old. The program created and produced by Sherwood Schwartz. So you say they were casting in on both coasts. So at what point did you find out who was going to be who?
Well, I don't know that. You know, and it's interesting. I haven't auditioned in quite a while. I've auditioned a couple times this year, and I haven't done that in a long time. And it's interesting because you don't know. You don't have any idea when they're going to say yes or no. It's a very difficult, and you think you did a good job, and you think the casting people say, God, that was just great. You're going to get it, and then you never hear anything. So I don't remember. I really don't remember when it happened. I don't really think Sherwood wanted me initially because I had interviewed with him a couple of times and gone and visited with him, and then he called me back because they were going to have on-screen auditions. So he called me back. We talked wardrobe and so on, and I kind of have a cute sense of humor. Sherwood and I were sort of quipping back and forth. And then when it came time to do the testing, he said to my agent, we're not going to test her this go-around. She's too smart to play Marianne. And I went, excuse me? You can act dumb, and I don't think Marianne is dumb. So my agent said, actually it was my husband at the time, he was not my agent, but my husband said to my agent, tell them that if they don't test her now, they're not going to test her next go-around. So they kind of forced my hand, his hand, to test me. And I really think, I don't know, now that the time has gone by and I think about it, I think maybe Sherwood might have had a little different vision. CBS really wanted me. Ethel Winant, vice president of CBS, really liked me. And I think maybe that was his, it was more like the Petticoat Junction girls in his mind, or the Donna Douglas girls in his mind from Beverly Hillbillies. I think he might have wanted her to be not as strong, maybe.
Right.
But I think once we tested, I think the magic sort of happened between us all. And I don't think he regretted it, but I think Marianne's a little stronger than you think. She's not a dingbat at all. She's not simple. You know?
Yep, no doubt. 297-5633. We'll return with Marianne Dawn Wells in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633, your local number. Outside our area, it is 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org for the spectacular Dawn Wells, who 50 years ago, along with a magnificent cast. Began on CBS, a run with Gilligan's Island that has continued to this day. In those days, there were only three major networks, so the audience was substantially higher than, say, the most popular show on television today. But for those who have perhaps not heard it in recent time, I think this is an appropriate time to hear the theme music from Gilligan's Island.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip that started from this tropic point aboard this tiny ship. The mate was a mighty sailing man, skipper brave and sure. Five passengers set sail that day for a three-hour tour, a three-hour tour. The weather started getting rough, the tiny ship was tossed. If not for the courage of a fearless crew, the middle would be lost. The middle would be lost. The ship set ground on the shore of this uncharted desert isle, with Gilligan, the skipper too. A millionaire and his wife, a movie star, the professor and Mary Ann, here on Gilligan's Isle. So this is the tale of our castaway.
You've heard that a time or two, haven't you, Dawn?
Well, and it's so funny. Excuse me. It's so funny how it came to be. Because when Sherwood, when CBS said, well, how in the world are you going to know that people are going to know they're marooned every week? And Sherwood said, well, I think I'll write a song. And they said, no one's ever done that before. I think it was the first song that ever introduced a show telling you what it was about. So Sherwood went home to write this song, not even be a music writer, you know. And he wrote it, and he wrote it, and he came back, and he walked into the with the suits, as they say in CBS, a table full of executives, saying, okay, now, what's the song? And Sherwood said, I was banging away on the piano, and even listening to it just now, when you hear the crash of the thunderstorm, he's doing the crash with a thunderstorm, and he finishes with a big fall to roll at the end, and they all nod and say thank you, and that's it. He said, I got up, walked out of the room. It is kind of a funny little song. It's just amazing, you know. Uh-huh. I guess when you know the inside stuff, and he really stuck to his guns. Sherwood did. He was a wonderful writer. Anyway,
I'm going to.
And now they're doing the movie. You know, Warner Brothers has optioned it, so it's a big to do right now. I think they're going to release it in 2015.
Here's a few emails that were sent. Is it true you were once Miss Nevada?
Yes, I was Miss Nevada in the Miss America pageant many years ago. When it was kind of different. I think it's gone back to Atlantic City, but I was a theater major, and I thought, not ever thought I would be a beauty queen. I'm too little and not tall enough and legs aren't long enough and all of that, but I thought, I'm a drama major. Let me see if I can get up in front of a bunch of people and do one of those acting scenes. And I went all the way to the Miss America pageant, which was nice. I didn't win, but good experience, good scholarship.
Yeah, and I'm sure it helped a little bit in getting the role.
No, you know, actually, I'm glad you mentioned it, because I ran a film actors boot camp up in Idaho for about 8 years, teaching kids how to get into the business and what it takes. And after the first two or three times of going on an audition, I had an interview with Jack Warner at Warner Brothers, and I realized there were a lot of people that were beauty queens and beautiful women that came to Hollywood that wanted to be in the movies. I was theater trained. I had a degree in theater, and I stopped mentioning it because I think they thought, you know, here she thinks she's Miss Nevada, is going to get on the screen. And Jack Warner and I had a conversation about it. He said, no, I think you're better off not saying it, too. I said, I think I'm better off not bringing it up.
Another listener notes, and I remember this now that it has been brought to mind. You were part of a duo with Alex Trebek at one point, weren't you?
No.
No?
A duo?
Yeah.
A couple?
On the air. I thought you were what was that show, High Rollers?
Yes, I substituted for somebody a couple times. Oh, sure. Yeah. Oh, back when we had those quiz shows. Yeah, High Rollers and Password and stuff. Oh, yes, you're right.
Yeah, okay. How are things going with Tina Louise? That's another question. She has kind of disappeared from the scene.
Well, I don't know that she's working anymore. She lives in Manhattan. She's in New York. I did a play there last year. I know that she was at a couple of openings of things. I didn't see her. But I don't know that she's working or not, but I think she's fine. I think she wrote a book not very long ago.
The two of you were an amazing...
While we're talking, you have people... writing in and you're reading when they're, this is interesting.
Yeah, the emails, it's amazing what we can do today. I did want to note that your career has continued. In fact, you've been in several roles, as one might expect, since Gilligan's Island, including you were once in Steel Magnolias in a play production, right? Stage production.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I'm doing it again in March in Pinehurst, North Carolina. You're in Baton Rouge, right?
That is
where
correct,
you are?
Yes.
I did a movie, and we premiered in Baton Rouge 100 years ago.
What was it?
You're in a really nice area. Boy, do I love your food.
You recall the film?
The Return to Boggy Creek.
Really?
It was a kid's film. We were monsters. We were shooting in New Iberia.
That was like 1977. Yeah.
Oh, you're good.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your first film?
The New Interns. It was one of the very first things I did, I think. And John Rich directed it, and Bob Reedon, Stephanie Powers, Telly Savalas, Greg Morris. It was kind of my first experience, and John in it ended up using me a lot in Bonanzas, and he directed about 7 or 8 of Gilligan's Island. We just lost him. He was a wonderful director. That was the first thing. Well, actually, I think I did Palm Springs Weekend for Warner Brothers, mm-hmm. which is a bunch of teenagers like to go to, you know, Daytona, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I was cut. I was on the film floor, so I never saw it, but I get about a 10-cent residual every once in a while.
The New Interns. That was actually pre-Gilligan.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, John Rich. Didn't he do All of the Family? All in the Family?
Oh, I think he did. And he did a lot of Bonanzas.
Yeah.
He was a wonderful director.
Well, what's the most fond memory you have of the years you were on Gilligan's Island?
What was a fond memory?
Yeah, what were the most fond memories you have of that time?
I think the relationship between us all. We were really a close cast. I adored the professor. We were sort of and the rest for a long time. We still send cards to each other, love the rest.
And the rest.
He was the funniest. He had the greatest sense of humor, which you wouldn't expect. You'd think it would be Jim. And the relationship. I loved Bobby and Alan. And I think, I don't know, it was fun to go to work. It was long hours. It was hard. You know, Bobby was always doing all the stunts, falling in the holes and out of trees, and it wasn't like it is today. We didn't have an audience. I'm always amazed that you can do comedy, that you can do the kind of comedy like Bob without listening to the laughs. Now everybody has an audience, and it really makes a difference. When you know you're funny, you can time it. When you're on stage, you can time it. You know when to cut the laugh and all of that. But when you're on film and nobody's there, you don't know if you're funny. And Bob just had that natural. He was that character. As a matter of fact, I have found Bob's son, Patrick, who, if you've watched the episode of Jack and the Beanstalk, Patrick was his little boy, played Gilligan in the little outfit, and he was 5. And he came and spent the weekend with me, and Bob said he's not going to take off the outfit, I'm sure, and he slept in the hat and the shirt. It was just darling, and I've just found him. He's now doing special effects and raising bees. But he's doing special effects for David Copperfield, so he's pretty good. And then I went New Year's Eve. I spent New Year's Eve at a comedy club with Alan Hale's granddaughter doing stand-up. So it's kind of fun to see the other generation.
Well, yeah, it is indeed. Now, I have another listener who scolded me when I was mentioning the cast members. I did not mention Natalie Schaefer. She was Lovey, the wife of Thurston Howell III. She was certainly an important part of the cast. Everybody had a significant role in this show.
Well, Natalie Schaefer and I were very close friends. She didn't have any children. I was sort of a surrogate daughter. She was on Broadway with George Kaufman and Moss Hart and a lot of wonderful films with Susan Hayward. The cast was fabulous. I mean, we had some really good actors. You look at a silly little show and you don't realize it, but I think that sort of makes it in addition to the plot.
Well, we look forward to perhaps hearing from you later in the year, Dawn. I know you're writing the book, and come September it will be one half century since Gilligan's Island came about. It's interesting that we had all the turmoil in our country at that time, just after the assassination of the president and the Vietnam War and the civil rights struggle. All those things were happening on the periphery, and yet folks were they were immersed and enthralled with Gilligan's Island.
I think it was an escape, don't you? I think it gave us a chance to laugh at something if there was so much going on. Would you mind just asking if I could just talk about my Facebook.com?
I don't mind at all.
Can you like me, whatever that means? Can you like me on Facebook.com? Keep up with what I'm doing. I'm doing so many things, like your show and traveling. So it's Facebook.com/, the real Mary Ann, as opposed to the fake Mary Ann. The real Mary Ann, but I'm traveling a lot, and I get a chance to meet the fans, so they'll know where I'm going and what I'm doing, and I'd appreciate that if you don't mind.
Okay. So you can find you on Facebook, The Real Mary Ann, Dawn Wells, from Reno, Nevada.
Yes. Have you been there?
I have not been to Reno, no, but I would like to. But
come and visit us.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, dear. Appreciate it.
I had a great...
And we'll talk again soon, I hope.
I hope so, too. Thanks a million. Have a great day.
Dawn Wells.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And we must note that the Florida State Seminoles are the BCS champions, the last team to receive the Crystal Trophy. 16 years of the BCS. That system will now be changed by virtue of a four-team playoff. Next year, starting January 1, one of the playoff games will be in New Orleans, and perhaps the LSU Fighting Tigers will be in the hunt. LSU has now gone 7 years without a championship, I guess 6 years. January 4th, 2008, if I remember right, was the night that Les Miles and company defeated Ohio State 38-24 in the Superdome. And LSU won two championships in a span of 4 years, having won in 2004 under Nick Saban. But last night in Pasadena, California, it was Florida State rallying from a 21-3 deficit to defeat Auburn, this year's Cinderella team, which came into the game with only one loss against LSU. And Auburn had a significant lead and lost it in the final minute to the Florida State Seminoles, who win by a score of 34-31. None other than Nick Saban said Auburn would need 35 points to win, and they got 34. Jimbo Fisher, by the way, the coach of Florida State, was a former offensive coordinator at LSU for 6 years, 7 years, 5 years under Saban and 2 years under Les Miles. But it was a remarkable game last night, and the first time ever that a team trailing at the half in the 16 years of the BCS has come back to win the game. It was an impressive rally by Florida State and the Seminoles' freshman quarterback, Jameis Winston. Florida State's now won three titles in modern times, and this is a school that wasn't always a football power. In fact, at one time, the school in Tallahassee was a girls' school. But in 1973, Larry Jones, the former athletic director at LSU and assistant coach and player who died last year, Larry Jones was the head coach at Florida State at a time when it wasn't as easy to win there as it is now. And Florida State 40 years ago went 0-11. No wins and 11 losses. Florida State this year went 14-0. 14 wins, no losses, and that was good enough to win the national championship. Two under Bobby Bowden and now one under 48-year-old Jimbo Fisher. Mark downtown says, Jim, is there any chance that sports broadcasts will televise games in the future without announcers, as the game sound on ESPN last night? The telecast I watched had Brent Musburger calling the action. I don't know. Did they run another one without announcers? Mark says, it was so great to be able to watch the game without any talking heads, just game sounds as if you were in the stadium. They even broadcast the band at halftime. This is a great idea, writes Mark. Now, if you watch the games on television, quite often you're going to have a better view and, of course, a more relaxed setting. You might even be able to drink a beer than you would if you were at the game. And it makes some folks perhaps buy tickets and stay home. And that's what has been happening in the thousands at LSU when the Tigers play these lesser-known opponents and in some cases better-known ones. The announced crowd is the capacity, 92,000, which will go up to 101,000 in September. But the real crowd is in the 60s or 70s, and I think it's because of the comfort of at home. And now Mark is suggesting that let's just get rid of the announcers. Now, for those of us who have been sportscasters, the last thing we want is to lose all the jobs that these sportscasters have. But LSU, by the way, Next year, as in September of this year, I'm still looking ahead, next season, the Tigers will be losing a lot of key players, but no doubt they will be ranked nationally, and they have a favorable schedule. As we've noted on this show, the schedule at home and the expanded Tiger Stadium is Sam Houston State, New Mexico State, UL Monroe, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, and Alabama. Alabama being the marquee game, but the Crimson Tide look to be less than invincible now after losing their final two games of this past season. And the Crimson Tide, if they had defeated Auburn, and they almost did, would have been the opponent last night for Florida State, and it would have been interesting to have Nick Saban against his former assistant coach, Jimbo Fisher. That did not happen, but Saban was part of the broadcasting crew for ESPN and did a credible job. He certainly looks the part, and he seemed to be somewhat happy that Florida State had won. I wonder why. And it's the first time since 2005 that an SEC team has not won the BCS title. Saban, I'm sure, will be ranked very high, perhaps as high as second in the preseason hype leading into the 2014 season, and no doubt the defending national champions Florida State will be number one. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.